should be recording. So welcome, fans and friends, to another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast of the Armchair Dragoons, found over at armchairdragoons.com. With us tonight, we have a returning guest and our buddy Gary from Aardwolf's Lair. Howdy, Gary.
Hi, folks.
And continuing our theme of Mentioned in Dispatches bringing on podcast rookies, we have a first-timer joining us tonight. We have David from the Wargaming Company. Howdy, David.
Hey, everybody. Hope it's going well.
And as always, we're going to refer to things we are doing this evening or tonight, because when we record this, it's in the evening. But happy, good time of day, whatever you may be listening to this. So we'll, just pretend we're referring to whatever time of day you're on at the moment. So one of the things that I think all three of us have in common in the wargaming world is, we've made a couple of different visits to some conventions over the summer, over the last few months, and, you know, certainly plenty of them over the last several years. And, Gary, I think you have the most recent convention experience since it was like last weekend or something. But it wasn't that long ago. You were at Buckeye Game Fest up there in Columbus. How was it?
Yeah. So we started. The actual convention starts on Thursday, which I think would have been the 5th or 6th of September this year. But the War Room opened on Labor Day, which was September 2nd. So we got there pretty early on that day, and we got a couple of big games set up. I was in the, not super big, but, you know, still big OCS game. We played Baltic Gap, which I had never played before, which was pretty fantastic. We also, well, not we, but the other guys also set up a giant game of La Bataille de la Moskva, the new version from Clash of Arms. On an expanded map that somebody had printed to be like 140% or something like that. So they had about five people on that. We had four people on the OCS game, and we had a variety of smaller games going for the first couple of days. I thought it went real well. I was very happy with the OCS game. Like I said, I had not played Baltic Gap in the past, and it's probably now ranks amongst my favorite OCS games, which means I need to go find a copy.
For the one or two odd OCS games you don't already have, huh?
I actually have I only own three OCS games, but I don't need to own more than three OCS games because the guy whose house, one of the guys whose houses we play at, literally has at least three of every OCS game, most of them in the shrink. That does include Case Blue. So I think he has like four copies of Baltic Gap. I should just bully him out of one, actually.
A couple of those were comp copies he got for being part of the playtest crew, though, right?
That's probably true, yeah, but he's pre-ordering everything anyway, and then he's buying it again, manually. So, we're not really short. I pretty much have my pick of OCS games. Whatever I would like to do is available to me, even though I only own three of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some listeners right now who are busy trying to stab you through the podcast for, as you put it, over the summer at one point, the only reason you're not in more OCS games is because you don't have time, not that they aren't available to you.
That's correct. We here in Columbus, Ohio, are in literal OCS nirvana.
So, and for those of you that aren't quite 100% sure what we're talking about, it is not the Officer Candidate School. It's the Operational Combat Series. It's the really big, really snazzy, really fanatical, devoted following, I guess, is a good way to put it.
That's fair.
Yeah. So we had a giant Labatt game. We had Baltic Gap. We had a bunch of little stuff going as a part of the War Room. Once the full Buckeye Game Fest kicked off and started to invade the War Room a little bit, how did the war games hold up relative to everybody else?
Oh, pretty well. The big games tend to wrap up at some point on Saturday. And by about 5 or 6 p.m. on Saturday, the big games had been pulled down, and there were still some of the people that were playing in those games that were still there. But the war room at that point had become invaded by some non-war gamers. But there was, up until the point where I left at like 10 p.m. on Saturday, there was still wargaming happening in that room.
Oh, for shame.
I mean, it was coin, but, I mean, there was still wargaming happening in that room.
Which coin game?
This was a distant plane.
All right. Woo!
And yeah. Actually, that was Grant and Alexander from the Player's Aid that were two of the players in that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wish we could have gotten them into one of ours at Origins this past summer. That would have been fun to
have.
Yeah,
no kidding. Well, we're all going to have this conversation about Buckeye Game Fest 2020.
Yes. Yes. Well, my original intent was to come to Buckeye Game Fest this year because, like Origins, I can do it fairly cheap with family being there in town. I'm not out room and board anywhere. It's just the scheduling here around the combination of start of school plus imminent hurricane sort of messed with my ability to get to Columbus.
You should have packed up the entire family and told them you were taking them to safety from the hurricane.
Yeah.
And driven them to Columbus and come to Buckeye Game Fest.
Yeah, the thought briefly crossed my mind, but then I decided I wanted to stay married. So that did sort of kick in.
Safety be trumped. Yeah. I'm with Gary on this one. I mean, really it's an act of love and devotion in order to escape the safety of gaming.
Yeah, hi everybody. Exactly. No, we're gonna escape to safety and here, you guys hang out at the house while I go play games for a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. You took them to safety.
Yeah.
It was very stressful. You need to de-stress.
So David, most recent game event for convention for you, I think, was Adepticon, or has there been one since then?
No, we were at, we've had kind of a busy year. We're in our little valley of inactivity at the moment. We started out with Cold Wars in March, and then Adepticon is all of a week and a half later or so.
Okay.
So then we bounced from Pennsylvania to Chicagoland for Adepticon. Then we did the 7 Years War Con in Indiana. Then we did Historicon back in Pennsylvania. Our next one of note coming up is Fallen in November.
Okay.
So we've had a busy year. Historicon was the largest recent event that we've been at. It's a new venue. It's in downtown Lancaster. It was fantastic. It was a very, very good transition. That show's run by HMGS, which is the Historical Miniatures Gaming Society based along the East Coast. And they've had kind of a rocky relationship with venues. They were down in Fredericksburg for a while, which was a terrific venue, frankly. But getting to it's not the greatest thing in the world. But once you're there, it's quite nice. They moved it up to Pennsylvania to East Lancaster. And it was at an old venue that would be wonderful if you were doing if you were LARPing the zombie apocalypse, it would be a terrific hotel. But then that was kind of a stopgap solution because they were going to move it somewhere else and that venue fell through. It got bought out and became a data center or something like that. So in any case, this year they were in downtown Lancaster, in a very nice modern venue. Everything was split between floors. Everything was contained in one building vertically, and it had a wonderful exhibitor hall. Access was quite good for the most part. The game halls were ample. It was a nice step up for venue.
I heard from someone who had attended the previous Historicon venue, so not where they were this year in downtown, but the other Lancaster venue, that the hotel from The Shining seemed positively, perfect relative to where they were last year or the year before.
Yeah, inviting even, yes. Yeah. So you mentioned Adepticon. You know, Adepticon's a very well-run convention. We like going there a lot, and there's a ton of positive energy around that show. There's also a very... Now, I hesitate to say youthful because it's a pretty diverse, inclusive crowd. I mean, you've got older gamers, you know, well past retirement age, but you've also got relatively young kids there. You've got husbands and wives with their kids coming to the convention to all participate and play. So there's a lot of intermixing there, and it's a nice show with a lot of smiles for that. We had a couple of guys who had never gone to Historicon before. We had met them at Adepticon. They're fans of ESR Napoleonics, our miniatures game at the Wargaming Company, and one of them had just moved out to Pennsylvania, and so he goes, "Okay, great. You guys are going to be at Historicon. I'm going to come to Historicon." Well, you know how it is when you look up stuff on the web. You find what you find, and sometimes you get the address from last year or whatever, which is what happened to them.
Oops.
So they accidentally drive to the zombie apocalypse venue, as we'll call it comfortingly. And they get there, and their reaction, as they're recanting this to me later, is, "Holy crap, if this is where it is, we're just turning around going home. We've driven over an hour to get here. We've both paid and pre-registered for our games and stuff already. But if this is where it is, this doesn't work. We're just going home." They found out where it actually was. They got out downtown just fine. And as they're telling us the story at our booth, they're going, you know, "This place is terrific. This is, you know, it's a clean, well-lit place," as Hemingway would put it. "The people are smiling and the place is brightly lit and everything's clean and everything works." And so it was a good follow through for people who were there for the first time.
Well, that's a good experience that comes with its own amusing tale that almost went bad. So I'm glad it all worked out in the end. David, a question. I know that you guys have the booth and the company set up there and everything that you're doing with your Napoleonic games with the Wargaming Company. How often, if at all, do you ever actually get to just show up at a game convention and just go play games as a dude there having fun?
Yeah, not much. So I mentioned the 7 Years War Convention. Either of you guys familiar?
I'm not.
I've heard of it.
Okay, so the 7 Years War Convention is tiny. I don't know if either one of you guys has a beverage in front of you, but it's probably the diameter of your glass. the 7 Years War Convention fluctuates between maybe 75 and 100 and a quarter. I mean, it's sort of the game convention you can fit on the head of a pin. But it's in South Bend, Indiana. It's a Friday-Saturday convention. People show up Thursday, and then events are Friday and Saturday, and Sunday is a travel day. But it's a great little convention. And while we get an exhibitor booth there, It's mostly just to go hang out with friends sort of thing. It's a very social convention. It's kind of like, it's almost like a high school reunion each year, except everybody actually wants to see each other.
The Gary's got you beat on a small little game convention there.
That's true when
he covers Winterfest here in a minute. Yeah. So David, you've primarily been there as an exhibitor. You've got your stuff you're selling. You may sneak in a game around your merchant duties here and there. But it sounds like you don't often get a chance to just go show up and play.
No, the last time I went to a game convention to play was the year before we founded the Wargaming Company.
Yeah, so it's been a while.
There's kind of a direct correlation there.
Yeah, yeah. It's been the better part of a decade since I just went to one just to go play when I wasn't there as either an exhibitor or a GM or a journalist, or some combination thereof. So I feel you. I'm there with you.
No, I thought the journalist just hung out in the bar and had people buy him drinks while they interviewed him.
I can vouch that that is not the case.
Yeah. Gary and I are both going to squash that.
It's my hopes and dreams of becoming a wargaming journalist where I hang out in the bar and people buy me drinks and talk to me. That's all in my head, not true.
You're crushing
my dreams here.
So the earliest gaming article that I can recall having written, I believe was 98, writing for RPG.net way back when. So in all the time that I've been writing for covering games, either RPGs or war games, exactly one time have I had somebody buy me something to drink. It was in the middle of the day at Gen Con in 07. Randall from Catalyst Games Labs, when we were sitting down talking Battletech, bought us both a drink at like the little coffee stand that was right there inside the convention center in Indianapolis. That's the only time I've ever had someone buy me something to drink in my role as a journalist.
Yeah, that must have left
an impression, because that seems to be a pretty vivid memory.
When it's the only one, you tend to not confuse it with very many others.
Well, and I thought it might have been because you were sitting around talking about Battletech.
Well, so the way the whole Battletech
fan, so it's all relative.
Well, and the way the whole Battletech thing fell into place was completely an accident anyway. I was there covering Gen Con in 07 as a journalist for back when I was still writing for the Wargamer back, you know, like four owners ago at this point. And so Jim had gotten me a press pass to go for the day. I made a day trip to Indianapolis from Columbus. And I had some dedicated time set aside, appointments as a journalist to talk to Fantasy Flight and to talk to WotC, because that was shortly before D&D 4th edition was coming out. And was going to be sitting down talking to those guys. And so I had some time to kill in between and was walking around to hit a couple of the different booths. And I am the Catalyst booth. You know, I've been a Battletech fan. I started playing Battletech back when it was still called Battle Droids. So I've been a Battletech player for a long time, been a fan for a long time. And you know, I'm nosing through some stuff. And Randall's like, hey, you got any questions? I was like, yeah, just curious, you know, here covering the show, just wanting to talk to somebody about sort of what are the upcoming plans, where's the product line going, that kind of stuff. And Randall's like, well, look, I need a break anyway. Let's go grab something to drink. We'll go sit down for a minute off to the side. So completely spontaneously, unplanned, of his own volition, he took 45 minutes away from the booth to go sit down at the coffee stand inside of the convention center there and gave me 45 minutes of uninterrupted time of just talking to him about Battletech, which was ridiculously cool and generous of him. And totally unexpected. It was completely off the wall. Oh, it was great. It was great. That, for a single day at a game convention, that one day that I was at Gen Con 07 as a journalist, has got to rank among one of the all-time greatest days I've ever spent at a game convention. The loot I came home with from that one was pretty insane. Not all of it was paid for. Some of it was comped stuff. Some of it was me selling other games in order to fund my purchasing there. Gary will appreciate this. I came home with unpunched copies of both Test of Arms and Battlefield Europe, the old first battle games, back when Crazy Igor's was still in business. I left a bunch of money at Crazy Igor's that year. But that was a fun day to be at Gen Con there as a journalist.
2007, I'm trying to remember where Battletech has had a very storied life, and I've, yes. I've been into it and out of it and into it and out of it, as most people have. I'm trying to remember whether they were still in the thing known as Dark Age. So this would be after Callus took over, WizKids was all about Dark Age and the click bases.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Catalyst sort of brought it back to roots.
So this was, there was a, that year there was a new box set that had rolled out with a bunch of, single piece minis in the box. a dozen or so. There was also a couple of hardcovers that were released at the show because Randall ended up giving me copies of a couple of them. But it was post-Clan Invasion. It was post-Davian Steiner Imperial Marriage. But I don't know if Dark Age had fired up, it was a relatively recent thing that was not quite taken hold of everything. The Clicky Tech stuff was not in evidence at the Catalyst booth at all. It was almost like that was a completely separate
world. Catalyst was, yeah, they were moving back away from that, which I think, thank God.
Yeah. But it was, I long ago gave up attempting to keep up with the campaign chronology of the BattleTech universe. And if I'm going to sit down and play, I'm going to sit down and play, you know, some discrete one-off battles here and there. But trying to keep up with the campaign world anymore has just turned into a fool's errand for me. So I've sort of given up. As long as I can have fun with the couple of toys that are in the box and a good looking map, I'm happy. So,
it's a good way to be.
Yeah. So, Gary, I know you are normally either a game player or a journalist or some combination of the two. When you are at these, I believe Buckeye Game Fest, you were primarily there just to sling dice, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, Origins, I know you'd done on a press pass. Between Origins and Buckeye Game Fest, any other cons that slipped in there somewhere?
No. So the three this year so far have been Winterfest and Origins and Buckeye Game Fest. There was a plan to spin out to WBC for a day that second Saturday, and my car decided that not only was the air conditioner going to continue not to work, but the windows weren't going to roll down anymore. So there was no way I was driving 3.5 hours in the middle of July to somewhere in Pennsylvania with a car with no air conditioning and the windows don't roll down. So I went and got the car fixed instead of going to WBC.
Probably the appropriate call.
Yeah.
So, well, I tell you, one of these days I got to get you to come down here to Charlotte and hang out at Mace with me. That is my next stop. I've done Origins, this year and I've, now that I'm back in the Carolinas, I'm starting to make it a point to get to Mace more often. And the Mid-Atlantic Convention and Expo, or MACE. And the guys that run MACE also run a couple of smaller productions around the Carolinas as well. But MACE is kind of their flagship, and it's usually around Veterans Day weekend. And they're in Charlotte over near the university. 2,500-ish people total. And it doesn't feel that big at all. What was the attendance at Buckeye Game Fest this year, Gary? Do you know?
It was over 500. I know that. They were up by about 20%. They said to me, oh, we wanted it to be more than that. I'm like, well, if you're gaining 20% a year, I mean, you're doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's far worse you could be doing. Mace will pull in 2,500 over the weekend, and it never feels bigger than Buckeye Game Fest.
That's pretty robust attendance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really well managed, well run. It is in a hotel where they've got a handful of the different banquet rooms that they take over, and it doesn't ever really overwhelm the building. The banquet rooms sort of keep each of the different, genres of stuff, you know, the board games, the RPGs, the collectible card stuff, pretty well contained such that, whatever you're looking for, you can find easily, and you're not going to get stuck in a room full of stuff you don't want to be around. So it's pretty well set up that way.
So I'll mention for anybody that doesn't know, Brant, I assume you know this, this year and last year and next year, Buckeye Game Fest has been held at the Hyatt Regency in downtown Columbus, which is the same hotel that part of Origins has been in since 1995. So we are in a new location since you've been there.
Yeah, yeah. Now,
obviously, that convention could quintuple in size, and the hotel would not notice.
Yeah, yeah. And hotel guests would be asking, "Oh, there's a convention going on."
Yeah.
The Honestly, the Buckeye Game Fest venue that I enjoyed the most of the handful over the years that I was able to intermittently attend was the one up near 161 and High Street. I want to say it was a Radisson, but don't hold me to that. It was a small, unassuming hotel with a decent-sized banquet room and then, like, one partition that was in place where they had the auction around the other side of the partition one day, back when they were still allowed to do auctions.
Yeah, and that was before my time. Apparently that Ohio law is, A, more recent than I thought it was, and B, apparently there are ways to get waivers if you are a nonprofit organization of certain types.
Yes.
Around the auction law. So that's something that is being looked at, but this year we just had the consignment store that Buckeye Game Fest has had for the last several years. And there were some nice things in there. There was a lot of cool stuff in there. If you're a wargamer specifically, obviously it's mostly Euro type stuff, but there were some nice things. I didn't buy anything in the consignment store because there wasn't anything that I was like, oh, I gotta have that. And I ran in there first thing when the slot opened. But there were shrink wrap copies of GMT games and some old Avalon Hill games and a variety of things, including some really nice, couple of Avalon Hill games in those 1-inch flat boxes. The one, yeah, I'm thinking of specifically is Africa Core. Somebody picked up a cherry copy, unpunched, of Africa Core for like $10.
Wow. That's insane. So,
yeah, it's a great price. I thought about it, and then I'm like, am I going to play this? Probably no. So I let somebody else have a happy moment when they picked it up.
Yeah, the
Tactics won.
Wow, huh?
Yeah.
The other thing with the consignment store there, though, you know, when you've got Don coming in with Enterprise and the potential to bring any of their inventory from Indianapolis for you, there's a limit to how much bargain hunting you really need to do through the consignment store, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And I, of course, am not afraid to make an arrangement with Don to bring things out of his very large inventory, which I did this year and last year. So, I had stuff to buy on the day that the dealer's room opened, and then I bought a couple of other things after that. So, from Don, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So, the... And Gary, if I'm not mistaken, you still have at least Compass coming up, right?
That is correct. I have registered for the Compass Games Expo in armpit of nowhere, Connecticut, which is Veterans Day weekend. I forget that where it's, I forget. I can never remember the name of the city. It's not a major city. It's by New Haven. That is Veterans Day weekend. So we're spinning up from Medina. And we're driving up, so we'll see. I've never been to that event. The guy I'm going with has been to that event. He said it was phenomenal. It is a young event. I think this is its second or third year. I am pretty much going just to play stuff, although I may, if I'm feeling up to it at the time, try to corner John Kranz and to talk to him. He, of course, runs, he works for Compass Games now, and he runs Compass Games Expo. And he is also the mind behind the Consim World Expo in Tempe, Arizona. He's been running that for years.
Yep.
So, and the Consim World website too. So, I mean, he's got a whole lot of irons in the fire. Makes me feel real lazy.
You, while at CompassCon, you will be joined by our good buddy Mirth from the Armchair Dragoons.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, that is not quite, but close to commuting distance for him.
Oh, that's great.
Coming over from Maine. So it's long day trips, but he just gets the hotel and just stays there so he can play all night. But he was there last year also, so this will be his second trip to CompassCon. I think this is only their second year. I think so. It's pretty new there. David, do you guys have any more on the books going out later into the year?
Last one we've got coming up this year, we skipped NashCon because they changed their date out. That's in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. And we had a conflict, so that wasn't able to work for us. So our last one this year is Fall In, which is going to be in Pennsylvania again in Valley Forge this year. It's a new old venue. They've been there before. We have not been there, and it's moved around since it was last there. So it'll be interesting to see. Fallen of the three shows that HMGS runs on the East Coast, it runs a spring one, Cold Wars. It runs a fall one, Fallen, and those are people debate which one's a little bit bigger. Which one's a little bit smaller, but they're nominally in the same ballpark. And then Historicon's their big one in July. So I got kind of a broader question for you guys. Is we travel in very different convention circuits, the Wargaming Company from the two of you. So I got kind of some curiosities as to the conventions that you attend. What tends to be the makeup of the people and the events, and what kind of some conventions, a lot of the ones that we go to, for the most part, are not very diverse in their events. Now that's because we're looking for those, because we do miniatures. So we're looking for shows that have a lot of miniatures presence or predominantly miniatures presence. But a lot of the more diverse shows have got some interesting things going on. What's the makeup of the ones that you guys are in?
Well
Buck,
I was going to say, Gary, I think you know everybody at Winterfest by name.
Yeah, pretty much. My big two events for the last couple of years have been Origins. Three events. Origins, Buckeye Game Fest, and Winterfest. And Origins has everything, right? Video games do not have a big presence at Origins, but they are there. Otherwise, every type of game you could possibly imagine, from poker tournaments to LARPs to classes on how to make your own chainmail dice pouch to a whole hotel, like the entire Hyatt is essentially filled with RPG stuff.
Poker tournaments at Origins.
There is a poker tournament at Origins, yes.
One year they had a national chess
championship. How well attended this thing is, I couldn't tell you, but sure. Yeah, there is one.
There was one year they had a national chess tournament there.
Wow.
Yeah.
The LARP stuff and the RPGs and all that all makes sense to me. It's all kind of in the same universe. But when I think gaming, and don't get me wrong, we have a local poker night about once a month with a group of us. I like playing me some poker, but those seem far afield.
It's also not something I've been inclined to investigate as somebody who attends Origins as a journalist for the four guys playing poker in a back corner somewhere. But, I mean, certainly it's not something that is very visible. But I mean, Origins has something for everybody. There are tournaments, large tournaments, I mean, as in dozens of people, for CCGs that have not been in print for 15 or 20 years. And I'm thinking specifically of the Jihad Vampire the Eternal Struggle tournament, which is well attended.
Sure.
Every year. That game has been dead for at least 15, probably 20 years.
It helps that it's a good game.
I thought so too at the time. Nobody wanted to play it. Everybody wanted to play Magic instead around me. In contrast, Winterfest is, which is in Sandusky, Ohio. The dates for this year are February 14th through the 20th. If you go to WinterfestWargaming.com, you will not see those dates anywhere. So to speak to what Brad said, yeah, I just know who's running it. But Winterfest is so small that the people that run the convention also play stuff full time. One of the guys that runs the convention, it's basically run by a guy and his son, was in our Goss game last year. And yes, he was occasionally pulled away to deal with something, but not very much. And it was more focused on that game than I was able to be. And I wasn't helping run the convention. So, it's attendance hit another record in 2019. I think it was something like 53 or 54 people. Okay.
Sure.
Attendance last year was a record in 2018. That record attendance was 29 people. And there's been, I mean, they've been doing this for like 20 years too. So it's a long running event that traditionally would draw something like 15 to 22 people, right? Where they would get two or maybe three big games going, have a bunch of side stuff set up. They have a room in a Best Western in Sandusky, Ohio. It's right sort of down the street from Cedar Point. But of course it's in February, so, you know, Cedar Point's closed and there's nothing else going on in Sandusky, Ohio in February. And they have one big room, which they were threatening to outgrow this year, actually. They had Bruno, I'm not even going to try to pronounce Bruno's last name. Bruno, the designer of a number of things, including, I think, developer on Bitterwoods and the designer of the upcoming Time for Trumpets from GMT, was there running two games of Time for Trumpets, which looked pretty impressive, by the way. They had a, I don't know if anybody saw my pictures, of the ridiculously large OCS game that took about 10 tables and had 16 players and covered the entire Eastern Front of World War II at 5 miles to the hex, from like mid-43 to whatever period they got to. I can't imagine that they got more than, I mean, we have a full 8 days. I mean, you can set up at Winterfest on Friday and play clear through to the following Saturday. So we have a lot of time to game, and that's one of the things that makes Winterfest so valuable. So they got it. Tony Burkett, the designer of that whole thing, was there setting it up on Friday, you know, puttering around.
And Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. No, he got it done on Friday, actually. Now, what time he started in the morning, I couldn't tell you, and he did have a couple of people helping him. I would assume that it takes something like 30 man hours to set that up. Because it took us about 20 to set up Case Blue, and this is four times as big.
Yeah.
So, I don't know about four times as big, but it's substantially noticeably bigger than Case Blue, which is itself enormous. So, but it is entirely war game focused. Every once in a while at night, you know, after, you know, the lads have tossed back a few, they'll get something light like a Terraforming Mars or something like that going. But otherwise, it's basically 100% board war gaming. There is sometimes a miniatures event as well. Not this year, but the year before there was, I don't even remember what it was because I didn't play in it, but there was some kind of enormous, like, 8-folding table miniature game that they had set up, which was played very, whatever it was, played very quickly. They finished it in, like, a day and a half or something like that. But it's primarily a board Hex and Counter war game event, overwhelmingly, not even primarily. Compass Expo, I'm not sure what to think of yet. And then, of course, Buckeye Game Fest is, I would say, 90%. I don't want to use the word Euros because they're not all, strictly speaking, Euros that get played in the big hall. There are a decent number of, I guess I'll call them Ameritrash games, like your Twilight Imperiums and stuff like that. They have a lot of those rail games, those 18XX games. There's some people that grind on that hardcore the whole time. And then, of course, we have the War Room, which I would estimate, I would say on, like, Wednesday, which is probably the peak of the War Room, because everybody that's in the war there for the War Room is there already, but the main convention hasn't started yet. I think we were at about 20 people in the War Room.
It's not a bad crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my Origins experience, you know, it's the same as Gary. Whatever you want to play, you can find. It's just a matter of how hard you have to go looking, depending on what it is you're after. And woe be unto the schmuck who tries to claim there's no wargaming at Origins. I'm going to just start hitting those people in the head with a stick on general principle.
This again.
I
have heard that rumor from people. Now, you know me. I have not been to Origins. We are interested in attending Origins. But I have met the individual that says the slander that people don't do miniatures gaming at Origins anymore.
Well, so the
that's not true.
Yeah, the miniatures wargaming is not as prominent as it has been in years past, but it's not non-existent. It is still there. There are definitely and it's not something you have to go looking hard to find. It's there. It's there in spades. And some of those guys go really all out. Was it Saipan that they had set up, or was it Tarawa?
It was Saipan.
They had a very impressive very impressive miniatures assault on Saipan. It was, and I mean, they had some sweet stuff too.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was Saipan or Tarawa. It was the Marines invading a Japanese beach and or a Japanese occupied beach. 18-inch palm trees sticking off the terrain mat. The clear water explosions blowing up all over the water as the landing craft were coming in. This thing was a good 20 by 30-ish feet, and about 8 players to a side, and it looked good. Oh, man, it looked good.
That's a pretty big footprint.
Oh, yeah, and there are some pictures of it. There's some pictures of it on the Dragoon's website in some of our Origins photo galleries, and I think I probably got some pictures on my personal Instagram page as well, just because it was so visually impressive to go get a look at. So Gary gets to see a lot more of Origins than I do because I'm sort of anchored to the Dragoon's booth where we're running the wargaming, the tabletop wargaming program. And so Gary gets to run around a little more than I do. Gary also doesn't have to take his little bit of time when not running a booth to go play dad either. Gary just gets to go play.
That's true.
The Mace is basically a miniature subset of the RPG and Euro tabletop areas of Origins. There's not a big exhibitor hall. It's almost all resellers, and a couple of the craft merchants, the artisanal folks that are doing stuffed animals and t-shirts and whatever. There's no publishers there really. There's a couple of smaller publishers there showing off some Kickstarter or pre-order things or playtesting some things. But it's not like an exhibit hall where you've got a lot of publishers present or anything. They do have a decent RPG crowd, but it's not, it's maybe a third of the convention. A good, over half the convention is just straight up tabletop board gaming. There's not even a huge wargaming crowd there, and that's part of what we're going to do this year is to bring some wargaming into Mace. The other thing that I have literally in my backyard, and it's one of them is this weekend. I've got Southern Front this weekend by the Triangle Simulation Society. And David, that's guys right in your wheelhouse. That room is almost all, it's 90% minis wargaming.
How is that show? I've heard about that show, but I don't have any firsthand experience.
So I'll tell you on Monday because I haven't been to Southern Front in almost 10 years. So the Triangle Simulation Society, for whatever reason here in town, we happen to have a big minis crowd. And the Triangle Simulation Society has, runs two decent size, a couple hundred people game conventions, one in the spring, one in the fall. Southern Front is the fall one coming up this weekend, here in town. And good terrain boards, well run, well managed, little convention. It's not overly huge. It's not overly fancy. It's just put out a bunch of tables and let's go play games. What is impressive about it is the care and attention that they put into the terrain and the minis that they have there. One year I went a couple of years ago, they had an incredibly impressive, I don't know if it was Sky Galleons of Mars. It looked like Space 1889 on Mars. But I'm not 100% sure which rule set they were using. That was just gorgeous. The way it was all painted with the Victorian minis on Mars. They had another, very large six faction free for all rumble of gnome wars going on. And, a well painted collection of gnome wars is just gorgeous. It is awesome. There was a fight, it was a Napoleonic skirmish of Russian Cossacks and some French guys, and the sense that I got was it wasn't a historical battle that they were fighting through, that it was something that was just kind of an ahistorical thing they put together so guys could sling dice. A couple of Star Wars X-Wing looking somethings where they were in space. I don't know if it was the X-Wing rules specifically or something else they were using. There was at least one Star Trek minis game going on as well. There was a whole lot of Warhammer fantasy skirmish minis games going. So it's a mixed bag, but it's all mini stuff of some sort. There wasn't a ton of large Napoleonic set piece battles. There also weren't a ton of like World War II Flames of War skirmish kind of battles either. And I think in part because you get a bunch of both of those almost on a weekly basis here in town at Gamers Armory, where they do minis night on Tuesdays, that you didn't need to do that at the convention. You could do the weird oddball one-off things at the conventions.
Sure.
So Mace tends to be very tabletop heavy. I've got Southern Front here in town that's very minis heavy. On any given weekend, I can get some decent RPG stuff done if I wanted to, because there's a good sized RPG community in town, as you would expect with all the colleges we've got around here. But if I want to actually sit around and do the OCS type of stuff that Gary gets to do at Buckeye Game Fest, one advantage that I have here in town is I've got Gamers Armory in town. And so I can go over to Scott's store and we can shove two tables together and we can set up a giant war game for, you know, 6 hours on a Wednesday night and just sit there and play for a while if we wanted to.
So that's like a whole turn.
Yeah, I know. but he, you know, there aren't a ton of places in town where you have a regular weekly ASL meetup, outside of the really big, like Washington DCs and New York cities of the world. A town our size shouldn't be able to host a weekly ASL get together and have a half a dozen guys consistently there without it being the same half dozen guys every time.
You know, that's a funny thing though, because I just found out the other day that, now I'm going to screw this up because I don't follow it, but it's, Flames of War, is it their, I think technically it's their internationals because their competition, because they've got, there's a guy in it from the UK, there's a guy in it from New Zealand, they'll both be flying in. But that's happening here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities, and I was completely blown away by that.
Yeah.
But it turns out that they don't have the largest Flames of War group nationwide or maybe internationally. I guess I don't know. But they do have the highest number of active participants. Because there's one out towards your guys' direction that dwarfs it. But the number of active participants is drastically lower.
Yeah, I don't know that the folks down here in the Raleigh area would necessarily be the largest, but they're probably on the short list. Again, sure. We happen to have a very robust minis community around here. Much like Gary has his OCS Nirvana up there, we have minis Nirvana around here. Which works out. The other thing you've got in your neck of the woods up there, David, is you've also got the First Minnesota guys, with David Doctor in that crowd, that you've got a decent wargaming, tabletop wargaming crowd up there, if you want to go looking for them. Like, they're there.
There's wargaming in the Twin Cities is, especially historical stuff, it's interesting because there's a gazillion people here. In half a gazillion groups.
Yeah, yeah.
There's and it's funny because you know where we meet each other?
At the conventions.
Outstate at conventions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, it's very similar down here. We have a huge, robust gaming community that is very fragmented, but we've got a ton of gamers in the area here of all stripes. Gary just happens to have the dumb luck of being in Columbus where you've got cabs and you've got a very well-organized, well-run, large gaming group that manages to sustain itself. And you know, what's one of the quips we always make about gamers is you put 10 gamers around the table and, you know, 2 hours later they'll still be arguing about what game to play. And that you know, cabs somehow has managed to overcome even that problem that many other people have. So Gary is fortunate on many fronts to be where he is, that he sleeps in his own bed for Origins. He has multiple OCS groups and he's got cabs right there. So
there are tremendous advantages to going to out of town conventions. You don't have to drive home at night.
Yes.
At Winterfest, because it was Goss we were playing, so we could do this. It was like, oh, it's the Allies' turn. I'm going to go take a nap. I'll see you guys in an hour. So and that totally happened on a daily basis.
Yeah. There's an old stand-up comic bit by this guy named Emo Phillips.
Yep.
You're familiar?
I know Emo.
I remember him, I should say.
So he, I don't know that he's around anything more. I don't know anything about him other than this stand-up bit. But he did this stand-up bit about, it was once in San Francisco and went to the Golden Gate Bridge. And this guy's going to jump off the bridge. And he goes through this long, drawn-out, building-up discussion with this guy that's all turning on religion. But you can take all of the religion references out and substitute in your flavor of gaming. And all you need to know is, through this like 17 layers, they have everything in common. And they get to the end, and he goes, "Die, heathen," and pushes the guy off the bridge. It seems like we do that way too much. You know, with Napoleonics, it's, not so much anymore because everybody's moved away from Empire. But once upon a time, you know, everybody who played Napoleonics played Empire. And there's six different versions of Empire. And you meet a guy at a convention and go, "Oh, you game? Oh, yeah, I'm a gamer." "Oh, okay. You, RPGs, war games? Oh, I do miniature war games." "I do miniature war games, too." "Wait, you do historicals? You do fantasy? You do sci-fi?" "Oh, I do historicals." "Really? Me, too. What historical period do you do?" I do Napoleonics." "Me, too." You do Napoleonics in 10 millimeter or 6 millimeter or 25 millimeter or 15s? "Oh, I do 15s. "Me too." "Oh, that's terrific. So what you play for Napoleonics? Do you play Napoleon's battles or do you play Empire?" "I play Empire." "Me too." "Oh, do you play Empire 5 or do you play Empire 4? I play Empire 3, but we've modified X and we've modified Y." "Forget it. We can't talk. We have nothing in common."
Yeah.
"Let's fight it out with fisticuffs."
"Yeah, we might as well throw our collections in the trash. We can never war game together."
Yeah, God forbid you run into the Napoleonic Minis wargamer who has an unpainted army.
You know, it's interesting you should mention that, because I didn't actually know that. I've heard of Empire. But I didn't know that. That sounds suspiciously like the Labatai situation, where there are seven different rule sets or whatever it is, and everybody plays all of them, as far as I can tell, and therefore leading to great confusion as people misremember rules from another rule set from this game that came out in 1976 or whatever. We had that happen in the Labatt game. So that was the first question I was asked about that game, is which Labatt rule set they were playing with.
And just like guys never stopping to ask for directions when they're lost on a road trip, nobody will stop to look it up in a rule book.
Yeah, well, these guys, a couple of these guys were learning, so I think they did. But it's funny that they're both Napoleonic systems.
Yeah, yeah.
Empire was dominant, now, you know, it's many moons ago, but late 80s, early 90s, Empire was the system for Napoleonic miniatures gaming. And now you can kind of divide Napoleonic gamers into a couple of categories when it comes to miniatures. You've got the guys who wish the Empire was still dominant. You have the guys who are so relieved that it's not. And then you have the guys who say, "What's that?"
Yeah. I think we can all agree, as long as you're playing something, you know, who cares? We're coming up close on our 1 hour mark, so I do want to get a particular question in here. We've sort of covered what's next for each of us. I've got Well, I've got Southern Front coming up, but I'm going kind of as a journalist for a day to take some pictures because I got to work this weekend. But my next real convention I'm planning to attend is Mace, where I'm going to be doing some wargaming stuff on behalf of the Dragoons there. Gary, I think your next one's Compass Con, right?
That is correct.
And David,
I should also mention, and Brant, this is breaking news. This news is not yet found on the Multiman Publishing website. Multiman Publishing's Winter Offensive event in Bowie, Maryland will be held January 16th through the 19th, 2020.
So you're going to try to hit that one?
Oh, I'd like to. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I can tell you the entire saga of what's happening over here, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. Well, we've only got a couple minutes left on the recording, so we'll have to save it for another extended recording session sometime. So David, you've got Fall In coming up, right? Is that the next one you guys are hitting?
15 to 17 November out in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania.
I love how everybody calls it Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, as though it's out in this desolate wilderness somewhere where Washington spent the winter. Valley Forge is like a suburb of Philly, right? I mean, it's a park surrounded by a giant metropolis. And because it's Valley Forge, we have this impression of it being in the middle of nowhere, you know, and it's just not
this
really.
It's actually held in a casino and convention center.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's about the opposite of freezing to death in the winter.
So a slightly different question, if you don't have an answer off the top of your head, cool. But Gary, over the next year, if you're going to try and hit a convention you haven't already been to, what do you think you might try to get to over the next year or so?
So the question then becomes, which convention would I like to go to, and which convention is much likelier for me to go to? What the convention I would like to go to would be the Consum World Expo in Tempe, but it's an expensive trip. I mean, we've got guys here that drive there, but they're retired. They can do that. They can say, I'll take a week and a half to drive out to Denver and Tempe and spend a week there. I can't do that.
Well, at least one of those guys is stopping in Denver to see family, too. So
that's true. So that means that the far likelier event for me is going to be WBC. Now, I happen to have made a contact at Buckeye Game Fest who's got space to share at WBC, so that makes that more likely than it might otherwise have been.
That's very cool.
Now, Brant, when you answer this question, you can't cheat and say Southern Front, because we've already heard that you're going there.
No, so the next ones, I'm hitting Southern Front this weekend again. There's a journalist not there to play stuff. I'm going to be playing stuff at Mace in November. The next one that I'm hoping to hit that I haven't been to before, I've not been to WBC, and I would like to try to do that one next summer. I've heard some really good things about LibertyCon, and it's not so far that it's a stretch for me to try to do a weekend over in Chattanooga. And so that one's, you know, Steve Jackson is always a prominent dude there. The Illuminati have always had a big hand in running that one. That may be one that I try to get to next year, just kind of on a lark a little bit, but I think LibertyCon would be a fun one to go check out. Unfortunately, from where we are, the bulk of the bigger conventions that I would be able to get to, many of them are up in Washington, D.C., and I enjoy Washington, D.C. It's not a bad town to go to. I just don't know whether I want to have to deal with Washington, D.C. headaches just to go play games. That's just a tough sell for me. But I think
I heard there's a little bit of traffic.
Yeah, just a little. And for some reason I seem to have a traffic magnet attached to my car. Every time I go anywhere near DC, it all follows me everywhere. So I would rather avoid it if I can help it. So Gary, sounds like I may see you at WBC next year. We'll
hopefully. I certainly hope to get there. I keep hearing what a great event it is. It's got a very strong, I mean, it's not a war game convention per se, but the wargaming presence is very strong there from what I hear. All of the major publishers are there. Lock and Load will be there. Decision will be there. GMT is there. Multiman is there. I don't know who else off the top of my head. There is a huge presence of Great Campaigns of the American Civil War there, which I would certainly like to play. There's a huge World at War tournament. That's the GMT World at War, the successor to the old Third Reich World at War. So there's all kinds of stuff there for me. There's more for me at Tempe, but again, it's a much harder and significantly more expensive trip. So it's looking like WBC is definitely a possibility. And if nothing else, I may be able to spend out there for a night or something like that. So it's very likely that I will show up at WBC 2020 at some point. Hopefully it'll be for the whole thing, but we'll see.
Yep. I'm hoping to be there as well. And if all goes according to the evil plan, we may have David joining us at Origins this coming year.
Would be great.
I'm not going to make him commit to it on the podcast, but I'm hoping that we can get him to commit to it at some point.
We'll get you in on our game of Freedom in the Galaxy.
Oh, see, now you got to be careful because you make it sound like I'm going to have time.
Well, you'll have time at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Even if you weren't running your booth, having enough time to finish a game of Freedom in the Galaxy at Origins would still be...
That could be challenging. I think those guys did finish, actually.
Yeah. The most insane thing that I've ever actually seen at Origins was back in the mid-2000s when I was there as Bayonet Games as an exhibitor. There were a bunch of dudes that just kind of on a lark in the sky bridge between the hotels and the main convention center that goes over those railroad tracks. They had set up off on one side just being a little goofy. They said, you know, we kind of want to see what a 10,000-point HeroClix game would look like. And for those that don't know, like most of the HeroClix miniatures, like a 100-point mini is kind of the top of the line. So you can imagine what a 10,000-point HeroClix game is going to look like.
That's hilarious that that's where they did it, too.
Yeah, well, it's going to make the final battle scene of Avengers Endgame look quaint. It was an El Grande setup. Well, apparently the WizKids dudes kind of wandered by, and they're like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. What you guys doing? And they explained it to them, and the WizKids guys' eyes got really big. They're like, holy crap. They're like, well, look, if you guys finish this and you can prove that you actually played this all night and finished it, swing by the booth. We've got some swag for you, whatever. So these dudes were taking selfies of themselves playing this game throughout the night, like at, 2:30, 3, 3:34. And coming back in the building the next day, it's like 9:15 in the morning as people are wandering in, and these dudes look like death warmed over, drool hanging off their faces. But they, like, four figures still on the battlefield going. But they actually completed a 10,000-point HeroClix game in this one, like, 18-hour marathon session, which is insane. It's sort of like, extreme tabletop gaming at that point, which is kind of crazy.
That used to be open gaming up there, too.
Yes.
At one point.
Yeah. That's what these dudes did. They spread a bunch of maps out on the floor and just kind of set up out there, overlooking the train tracks. And it's not like you're fighting anybody for space at 2:30 in the morning.
No.
So, but they managed to make it through the night. So, guys, this has been fun. Thank you for joining us to talk some conventions and some game conventions, some wargaming. The one thing I think we'll tell everybody out there for game conventions is just find whatever one you've got closest to you and go spend a day out there playing, right? Just go find your local game convention and go have a good time with it. Cause there's guaranteed there's going to be one in driving distance of you somewhere. So Gary, thank you. Appreciate it. Looking forward to reading your thoughts on Buckeye Game Fest whenever you send them over to us.
And, happy to be here.
Try and get them published for you once you pull your thoughts together and throw us some snazzy photos.
I can send you those tonight.
And David, we're going to look forward to seeing you at Origins this year.
I hope that we are there with you.
I was hoping he'd say sure, and then we'd have him committing to it, So, last, one brief public service announcement. The free streaming TV service Pluto TV has a 24/7 James Bond channel on right now.
Really?
Yes, it is James Bond flicks on a loop.
How did I not know about this?
Because I just told you. I've had it on nonstop in my home office here for the better part of like a week now, and it's been all Bond all the time. It's been a glorious trip through my childhood. So, Pluto.tv, and then look for the James Bond channel from there. License to Kill's on right now. They're about to kill Felix. Spoiler alert, I know, right? So, thanks, guys. Thank you, listeners. Come swing by and see us at the site at armchairdragoons.com. Join the forums, start talking a little gaming with us, and we'll talk to you next podcast. Thanks, everybody.